All right, what is going on, everyone? Welcome back to the podcast. So today's podcast episode is an interview that I did on a good friend podcast. Her name is Kara Goss. So I was a guest on her podcast. Her podcast name is the Not Your Quick Fix podcast. So definitely go check that out. Definitely go check out Kara Goss on Instagram, on Facebook. But I was a guest on her podcast, and we did kind of a Q&A rapid fire style of going over a variety of topics and a variety of common questions that both her and myself get really often. So this is part one of that interview. So in part one, we talk about, do you need to eat smaller or more frequent meals for better fat loss to kind of boost your metabolism, they say. We talk about, can the scale stay the same when you're gaining muscle and losing fat at the same time? And also we talk about, what's the realistic amount of muscle to even gain within, you know, 6 months or a year or even longer? We also talk about reverse dieting, you know, why sometimes some clients see weight loss during that reverse dieting process of us slowly bringing calories up, how that happens. We also talk about metabolic adaptation in this part one. And if we can reverse metabolic adaptation through increasing calories, how that looks like. And we also talk about how low your calorie should get in a fat loss phase. Like, a lot of people throw out the idea of, you know, 1200 calories being okay. If you're eating that low, it's super dangerous. And we kind of dive into, like, if that's really true and some circumstances where, and maybe like some people might have to push a little bit, you know, low in a controlled way with the right proper guidance. So that is part one. In part two, we talk about a lot of other really fun stuff too, about total carbs, net carbs. We talk about diet soda in part two. We talk about cellulite, saggy skin, how to get rid of those things. We also talk about intermittent fasting in part two, but really excited to bring part one to you guys. So be on the lookout for part two dropping within the next week as well. But without further ado, let's go ahead and dive in.
What is up, everybody? Welcome back to the Not Your Quick Fix podcast. It's your girl, Kara, here with episode 127. We have another week without Kylie on the podcast. Sadly, she is very sick today, and I am actually just getting over being sick. I had a 101 fever last night, literally felt like I was in a delirium. I was like, I cannot function right now. But it's so crazy because I was just talking to, I did a corporate presentation for one of my past clients this morning, and I was telling her about how my fever broke last night, and I just feel like a new person today. The human body is truly so insane. Like, the way that it can just, boom, flip a switch and heal itself. And immediately, as soon as that fever breaks, you're like, oh my God, I'm in a whole new body. So I am so happy that I am feeling better, that I could at least keep our episode going this week with a very special guest for you guys. This is actually a repeat guest and someone who is a wealth of knowledge, someone who I love talking to, all things business and health and fitness. This is my good friend, Joey Gass. So welcome back to the podcast, Joey.
Hey, thanks for having me back. It is really wild about how the human body can just like adapt and heal like that. And it's also wild how grateful you feel like mentally once you actually physically feel better. Like, you don't realize how good it feels to not be sick until you're sick for, you know, a couple of days and then you start to feel better.
For sure. Oh, but I feel that so much. It's like, you don't know what you got until it's gone, right?
Yeah, for sure. But yeah, I'm glad that we were able to, you know, record this too. And
me too.
Recovering from a little bit of like nasal stuff myself here, but we're here and we're doing it.
Yes, really, we got our caffeine.
I know, right? We got our.
Me and Joey were both like, we needed a sugar-free energy drink today.
Yeah, and we won't even talk about some sugar-free drinks maybe in this episode.
We'll see, for sure.
I'm excited. I'm excited to be on.
Love it. Love it. So for those of you who do not know Joey, he is also a registered dietitian, online health and fitness coach. And we had him on, oh my gosh, it was back in like, I think the first 30 episodes. So this was back in probably 2021 when we had you on, which was wild. So it's been a long time coming, and I've known Joey since around like 2018. So Joey, why don't you introduce yourself, kind of talk a little bit about, you know, your journey and like who you are, what you do, how you got here.
Yeah, so I am a registered dietitian and online nutrition and fitness coach, like Kara mentioned. And yeah, we have known each other since, I think, 2018, which is wild, like how long it's been, and how time just like flies. But I am the owner and coach here at I Thrive Nutrition and Fitness. So I work mostly with women who want to lose body fat, lose weight, get healthier, feel more confident in the gym. And I don't want to give a full detailed run through of my story necessarily, because we have some really, I think, good topics we're going to go into.
For sure, for sure. Abridged version.
Yeah. Shortened version is, you know, I grew up in a really unhealthy family for the most part. Like, my parents didn't exercise regularly. They didn't eat healthy. So I grew up with a lot of unhealthy habits there. And I really watched them struggle with their weight and their health throughout my whole entire life growing up. And it was when I got into college and I started gaining weight, even, you know, the freshman 15, they say, but gaining weight in college. And I kind of realized one day that I wanted to really change things for myself and not necessarily go down the path that my parents were going through with their health. So I made a change and started diving into the nutrition, the fitness, the health realm, and really fell in love with it. You know, had my own weight loss transformation, made a lot of really good changes, but then a lot of mistakes along the way on how I lost the weight and just learned throughout that process. And then eventually ended up going to grad school, getting my dietetics degree, getting into a get an internship, becoming a registered dietitian, and starting my online business and being able to coach people from there. And now I'm really inspired to help people just feel more confident in their own skin, because I know how that feels to not feel that way from my own experience. And really motivated to help others get healthier and lose weight and prevent health issues from occurring in the future, like my parents dealt with, because both of them have actually both passed in the past 5 years from you know, dealing with a lot of those health issues. So that's kind of a brief run through of my story. Here I am now, you know, coaching you know, full roster of clients, which I'm really grateful for, and just continuing to grow from there.
And you became a dad in the last year, year and a half?
Yeah, it's almost a year and a half. He is like 16 months old now. Okay. So that's been really cool too, which, like, a big part of me doing all this was because I saw my parents struggle with their health.
Right.
And there were physical limitations that they had when I was a kid that I noticed. So a big part for me now too is I want to be as healthy as I can for as long as possible for, you know, my son now and even like future kids that we might have down the road. And I want to really help, you know, people, especially women, moms, because they tend to put themselves on the back burner, especially their health the most,
for
but
sure.
really help them stay healthy long-term for their kids too. And, you know, lead to, or give their kids healthy habits to pass down as well. So, it's been a really fun being a dad, especially as he's gotten older into like the toddler stage and, you know, personality running around. It's been cool.
I love that. Oh, I love that so much. And I'm just so thrilled for everything that you've accomplished over these last few years in your business, and just to excited to see you, you know, continue to grow not only as a coach, but as a dad as well. It's so cool to see. So yeah, I am super pumped to chat with you today. And I think we have a really cool episode because, you know, I have been getting a lot of just kind of random questions lately, and a lot of them are based in nutrition misconceptions. Like, a lot of people really not understanding certain things whenever it comes to nutrition and fitness. So I kind of wanted to do a little Q&A style episode with Joey today, breaking down some really common nutrition and fitness misconceptions and myths that maybe we see and hear, which, again, I'm sure, Joey, like, you've probably heard these, all of these at one point or another, you know, in your health and fitness coaching career. And I think that these are some of the biggest questions that we do get asked. So, you know, just to kind of start out right out the gate, number one, one of the biggest questions that we get asked is, do we need to eat smaller and more frequent meals for fat loss or to boost our metabolism? Is there actually any science behind that? And why do people feel like they need to do that?
Yeah, this was something I feel like it's thankfully died down a little bit as time goes on, and now, like, you know, modern day 2024, but back in like 2014, 2015, this was still, I feel like, pretty prominent of people thinking they had to eat somewhere around like 5 to 7 meals per day in order to boost their metabolism or keep their metabolic rate going and everything. But that's really not true. And I think it's based off of a couple of things. One being, a lot of these recommendations of eating that often per day have come from bodybuilders who need a lot of calories in order to gain muscle or maintain their body weight or muscle mass, whether it's because they're just huge individuals in general, or maybe they're taking some extra supplements and they're not natural and that's causing them to, you know, need more of this fuel. But
for sure,
they need a higher amount of calories per day. So because of that, it's really hard to get 4,000 calories in a day from only eating like three times a day. So I think that's one reason why this kind of myth came about, is because of people needing those smaller meals in order to add up to, like, you know, 4,000 calories per day to actually put on muscle from these bodybuilders. I think another reason why this kind of myth came about is because of looking at more short-term changes in energy expenditure or calories burn. And what I mean by short-term is looking at, okay, how many calories are you burning in like a 4-hour period or a 5-hour period versus like a 24-hour period? And if you look at studies and they examine how many calories you're burning in like a 5-hour period, and let's say you're having two or three meals in that period versus just one, in that 5-hour period, you're probably going to burn more calories having two or three meals because of the thermic effect of food, which is basically your body burning calories in order to digest and absorb the food you're eating.
Yep.
So if you don't eat in a 5-hour window, your body might burn, let's say, 400 calories in that 5-hour window. But if you eat, let's say, two meals, your body might burn 550 or 600 calories in that window because it needs that energy to digest that food. But the thing with this is that that thermic effect is based off of the total amount of food you're eating in a 24-hour period.
Right.
So if you're eating the same amount of calories total throughout the day, it doesn't matter as far as the thermic effect with it boosting your metabolism, as long as calories are equal at the end of the day. So
yeah,
when you really examine it that way, like the more frequent meals, it really doesn't matter. And it doesn't boost your metabolism more than having, you know, a couple of meals in a day.
Yep. I think that that is something that's so misunderstood, is understanding that it truly doesn't matter if we are eating the same amount of calories in a day, and if those calories are broken up similarly between protein, complex carbohydrates, fat, everything of that sort, because we know that protein does have the highest thermic effect of food, followed by those, you know, fibers and fibrous carbohydrates. But it's really important to understand too that I think we can get so caught up in putting the cart before the horse, right? And we're like, oh, let me eat 5 to 6 small meals a day or whatever it may be, when in reality, we might not even be eating the proper amount of calories to begin with, right? So that's really where we need to start with things, and understanding that, okay, if you are somebody who does better with eating 5 to 6 small meals a day, totally fine. If you're somebody who does better with eating 3 large meals a day and a snack, 100% fine, right? It's really not going to make that big of a difference as long as you're consuming that same amount of calories throughout, you know, that span of 24 hours. And I'm so happy you brought up just kind of like that calorie balance and the thermic effect of food, because yes, while thermic effect of food obviously does play a role in energy expenditure, it doesn't make up a huge component of our daily calorie expenditure, right? Like there are so many other things that play a much bigger role into that.
Right. And it's all relative too, to how many calories you're eating too. Like that thermic effect.
Yep.
If you're eating 2,000 calories in a day, but one person's doing it in 4 meals and one person's doing it in 2 meals, the person who's doing it in 4 meals might have a little bit more of a thermic effect that is more frequent, I guess, because they're having more frequent meals, but it's going to be to a lesser extent because they're eating only 400 calories at a time versus a larger amount, versus the person who's eating 2 meals a day. They aren't going to have that boost in energy expenditure as often from the thermic effect, but the thermic effect when they do eat, because they're eating 1,000 calories at a time, is going to be greater. So it's all going to kind of equal out at the end. And so like when you're choosing how many meals to have, do it off of what's practical for you and what allows you to actually hit your total calories, protein, all those nutrients total throughout the day, versus, like you said, missing the forest for the trees, or trying to pick up, like missing dollars to pick up pennies or whatever, and trying to focus on those minuscule details that don't matter.
100%. And I think that that's going to be a theme throughout a lot of these questions as well, as missing the forest for the trees, right? So
yeah, probably.
For sure. For sure. Okay. Question number two, and this kind of combines two different questions, but can the scale stay the same whenever I am gaining muscle, and how much muscle is realistic to gain in a 6 month to 1 year span of time? Which I think the answer is going to be a lot lower than what most people think.
Yeah. So I guess your first question. So can the scale stay the same while building muscle and losing fat? So it is possible for that to happen, for the scale to not change, but your body composition to change. I'm sure you've seen it a lot in clients when they get started. I see it a lot when clients get started. But it only happens in a few different scenarios. One being that you're very new to lifting. So your body's not really adapted to the stimulus of lifting and you don't really have that much muscle mass on your frame yet. When you're providing the body with that new stimulus, it's going to grow muscle pretty quickly, and it can grow muscle maybe not at the rate that you're losing fat, but close to it. So you don't see that much change in the scale. So that's one scenario if you're very new to lifting. Another scenario is maybe if you are very new to eating a high protein diet. So your body's not used to getting that protein for recovery. Now you're getting in all this protein where you're going to be able to grow a little bit more muscle too. So that rate can be similar to the rate that you're losing fat. So that's another scenario. Another scenario where you could gain muscle and lose fat at pretty much the same rate would be if you previously had gained muscle in the past, but let's say you stopped working out for a consistent period of time, or maybe you suffered an injury, so you stepped away from the gym and you lost a little bit of that muscle that you previously had. Once you get back to the gym and you get back to lifting consistently, you're going to grow that muscle back pretty quickly, actually a lot quicker than what it took you to initially grow it. So that could be another scenario, is when you've taken a long kind of hiatus from the gym and you're getting back to it. And then I think the last scenario would be if you are taking some kind of drugs, like you're non-natural and taking steroids or anabolics, like that could be a fourth scenario where you could potentially be gaining muscle at the same rate that you're losing fat. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, and I do feel like with the, you know, body recomposition discussion, I do feel like at times I tend to see this happening in slightly leaner individuals who don't have as much body fat to lose. A lot of times we are going to maybe see a bit more body recomposition where the scale stays the same versus somebody who maybe has a bit more body fat to lose. Normally we're going to see that scale drop a little bit more whenever we're seeing those body composition changes.
Yeah, absolutely. Because it's all relative to how much extra body fat you have on your frame, right? So if you're somebody who, you know, to get to a healthy body fat percentage, you have 50 pounds to lose, right? That's a big portion of body fat you could be losing per week versus somebody who, you know, you're already at a healthy body composition or body fat level, but you just want to maybe get a little bit leaner. Like you might only have theoretically 5 to 10 pounds that you actually could really lose in the healthy range. So it's just a smaller percentage. So because of that, you're going to see less actual fat loss per week, which could, you're more likely to line up with the extra muscle gain in poundage that you're gaining per week too.
For sure. And so, okay, what can we realistically expect within 1 year?
Yeah. So like you said, this is probably going to be very disappointing for a lot of people. but it's also dependent on a variety of factors, right? Genetics play a big role. Sex or gender plays a big role too. You know, men are going to be more likely to probably build muscle quicker than most women. Not always, like genetics play a role too. There are some women who like really put on muscle easily and men who don't, but it, for the most part on average. Consistency, obviously, with your lifting, like if you're inconsistent, only lifting maybe one day a week here, maybe 3 days a week here and back and forth versus somebody who's working out 4 days consistently, that's going to play a big role. Nutrition, obviously, if you're in a calorie deficit, in a surplus, or eating at maintenance, if you're eating enough protein, having the proper programming, sleep, stress, all that stuff. So all that stuff obviously plays a role. But when we're looking at, let's say if you have all those things pretty much dialed in, if you're a noob, probably in your first year of lifting, it's realistic to maybe gain anywhere from 1 to 2 pounds of muscle per month, probably. So that would be like at the max, probably around 25 pounds of muscle in a year. If you're eating in a surplus, you're training properly and everything. And that's for somebody who's probably pretty genetically gifted, gaining 25 pounds of muscle.
That's a lot of muscle in a year. Yeah.
I mean, that's a lot of muscle, honestly, even in like,
no matter what,
a lifetime. Like, and I don't mean you have 25 pounds of muscle total on your frame, but 25 plus the amount you naturally just have,
right?
Like 25 pounds of extra muscle that your body actually doesn't need to survive, right? That that's a lot, which means maybe you have actually, you know, 35 or 40 pounds of total muscle on your frame. But that's probably realistic for your first year of doing those things consistently, Right. And you're a noob, probably anywhere from 12 to 24, 12 to 25 pounds per year gained. Past the first year, you're probably looking at more like 5 to 15 pounds in that kind of wider range. And obviously that's a pretty wide range, but it's dependent mostly on like those variables I mentioned plus genetics. Once you get past like the first couple of years of training and you're in like year two, three, and four, it's like if you can gain 5 pounds of muscle in a year, that's actually like really, really good. Actually extremely good. Like, I mean, you probably talk to a lot of natural bodybuilders or physique competitors or whatever, and if they step on stage and they're a few pounds heavier the next year they compete, but at the same body fat percentage, like that's a huge win for them, like to
For
gain
sure.
3 pounds of actual muscle mass in that time frame. And after like year four, once you get in year five, it's like you might put on maybe 5 pounds of muscle a year, and that's like spending most of the time in a surplus and really doing everything right and having all your boxes checked off. So it just, as time goes on, that number gets smaller and smaller and smaller.
Which is, again, I think that's why people get so frustrated. And also, a reminder to everybody listening who does want to build muscle, like Joey said, this is spending a large amount of time eating at maintenance or in a surplus, right? Not dieting, not chronically cutting calories, which is really important to understand. And same goes with weight loss as well. The more and more that you diet, the more that you go into a fat loss phase, the harder it is. The further and further that you get into this health and fitness journey, the more easily your body can adapt, right? And so I think that's where people get really frustrated as well. That's why we do see so many of those newbie gains. I mean, God, and this will kind of tie into our next question about reverse dieting, but I remember my working with my very first coach and I dropped 30 pounds like that while I was reverse dieting, you know? And so, and it's like now I reverse diet and I gain weight, you know? And so it's just, again, understanding the differences in the way that the body adapts and also like how much consistency you actually have to have the further and further and further you get into this journey. Super important.
Yeah, I think the big thing you mentioned too that was really important is just like the surplus and maintenance versus being in a deficit. Because like a lot of people have this idea that if they just like do everything, like train hard and eat nutritious foods, that their body is just gonna like keep gaining small amounts of muscle forever. But once you get to a certain point, especially after the newbie gain phase, like if you're not at least eating at maintenance, and probably even at maintenance, you're not going to gain much muscle after the newbie phase. But if you're not at least in a small surplus, like it doesn't have to be something huge. You don't have to gain, 5 pounds a month or something crazy. But if you're not in somewhat of a surplus, it's going to be very hard to actually continue to build muscle. And that's okay if you want to just like maintain the muscle you have, be healthy, work out, all that stuff. But if you like really want your glutes to grow, and you've been lifting for a couple of years, continuously eating in a deficit or even just staying at maintenance all the time, like you are sacrificing for sure some muscle growth you could have. And these numbers are going to be l even lower than that if you're not pushing at least somewhat of a surplus.
100%. So, question number three, really common question I get asked is why do I lose weight in a reverse diet? Or how could I lose weight in a reverse diet? Like, how does that happen for some people where other people might gain or maintain?
Yeah, so this is a really good question. So there's a couple of things we have to think about and a couple of reasons why somebody might lose weight in a reverse diet. Number one is that where you started your reverse diet at, you were already in a deficit and maybe you didn't know, or maybe you weren't logging correctly at first or whatever. But like if somebody starts their reverse diet at 1400 calories and they're reversing up to 2000 and their maintenance is actually 2000, like, and they actually start being consistent. Okay, I'm actually consistently eating 1500 and then I'm consistently eating 1600 the next week, and slowly you're still in a deficit. So that's why you end up losing weight in a reverse. I think sometimes people think they're eating 1400 to start and they're not losing weight, and a lot of times it's like inaccuracies in tracking, or maybe they're not consistently eating 1400. And they're like, well, I was eating 1400, not losing weight, and now I started eating 1600 and now I'm losing weight. Like, my metabolism must be really ramping up, which, there are, aspects of our metabolism increasing as we eat more food. But Sometimes it's just simply you started tracking more accurately and you actually were consistent with those numbers. So that's why you see that weight loss in a reverse diet. So that's one way.
Yeah,
No, go
and
ahead.
I will say too, a lot of times with that inaccuracy in tracking also comes them eating maybe 1200 to 1400 calories Monday through Thursday, and then Friday through Sunday they're blowing it out of the water, like 2500 plus calories, right? So again, we have to take that into consideration too.
Right. It's like, what are you doing consistently? And
Right.
all, so yeah, that's one aspect. Two is your non-exercise activity thermogenesis increases. So you've probably talked about this multiple times on your podcast, I'm sure, but stands for or NEAT stands for this. So it's basically all this like subconscious activity you do and not even realizing it. So like I'm talking with my hands right now. If you're somebody who's like very fidgety when you're sitting at your desk and doing work or whatever, those things that you don't even think about increase as you start to eat more food. So that could potentially cause your metabolism or energy expenditure to go up as you eat a little bit more food, which could contribute to you maybe losing weight while reverse dieting and calories coming up.
For sure.
So that's one aspect. And another could be your activity expenditure increases too. So if you're somebody who you've been under eating or eating a low amount of food and you work out maybe 3 or 4 days a week, but your workouts that kind of suck. Like you don't feel that strong during that, your energy isn't very high. You're kind of just going through the motions, picking up weights and just kind of repping them out and then stopping, not really pushing yourself, going to failure or feeling strong in those lifts. But you start eating a couple hundred or a few hundred calories more, then you might actually start burning a little bit more calories in those workouts because you have more fuel to put towards them, which then can increase a little bit of the calorie burn during your workouts. And if you're pushing yourself more in your workouts, getting closer to failure, then your body needs more resources to recover from those workouts too. So overall, it kind of, in a sense, raises your thermic effect a little bit or your metabolism a little bit at all times, just like working out a little bit harder.
Yes.
So that's one other aspect. Another aspect is stress. So when you're eating a low amount of food, your body kind of senses, oh, it's in the stressful state. Then what comes along with stress a lot of times is extra water retention. So you could be eating 1400 calories a day and like you should be burning 2000, but maybe not seeing changes on the scale because your body's in the stress state holding on to extra water, but you're still losing fat, but you're just holding on to extra water that's hiding that. Then you start to increase carbs or increase calories a little bit, and now you're eating 1600 or 1700 calories, and your body doesn't feel as stressed anymore. So you hold on to less water potentially because of that stress reduction. And then all of a sudden the scale goes down, and you're like, oh man, my metabolism must be like on fire
On
now, like burning. Yeah, right. It's
fire.
now it's actually turned on. Before it was turned off, but now it's turned on. And now I'm burning a lot more and losing a bunch of fat when really you were still losing that fat eating 1400. It was just masked by the water you were holding on to. And now that water weight is kind of coming down. And kind of the last point as to how this could happen is kind of revolves around stress and a little bit what we were talking about with how much are you actually eating? But with lower stress in general from eating a little bit more food, you're going to feel less hunger and you're probably going to follow the plan more. If I tried to
For
stick
sure.
with, 1200 calories during the week, I'm probably going to binge and eat a shit ton of calories later on in the weekend. But if I aim for 2000 calories a day, I'm going to be consistent with that and probably be able to stay consistent with that. I mean, 2000 for me would be low, but just like for the listener, they could be able to stick with that for the whole weekend and actually follow through with it. So that causes more adherence or more following through with the plan. So you see the weight loss there. So those are kind of the five ways that people would actually see weight loss or fat loss during a reverse diet.
That was such a perfect breakdown. And just like an extra one that I feel like can be an additive helpful layer. It might not be a direct cause of this weight loss, but is improved thyroid function whenever we are reverse dieting as well, right? Especially if you're somebody who's going from a lower carb diet to then increasing more carbohydrates. We also know that carbohydrates help with active thyroid hormone conversion. And that active thyroid hormone, T3, that is really kind of that master metabolic regulator, right? Like that's what's helping to improve metabolic rate. So it might not be a direct like, hey, this could be a reason why I'm losing body fat, but it definitely, I would say, is an additive layer that probably only helps in the long run, right? But yeah, that was such a good breakdown. I literally just had this exact conversation with a client the other day because she's one of my miracle clients. It's like she's only been with me since December, and we've been reverse dieting this whole time, and she's down almost 25 pounds. And I'm like, we just love to th see this. But again, really important for all of my people out there who are reverse dieting. Weight loss is not the goal in a reverse diet, and it is very, very okay if you maintain weight or even gain a little bit of weight as well. Because again, the goal of a reverse diet is to get you to a better place to be able to enter into fat loss. It's not necessarily to lose fat itself, which is super important to remember.
Right. And I'm glad you brought up the thyroid point because I forgot to mention that. But yeah, though, like the thyroid and even all these other reasons, like increased knee, increased activity from your workouts, like those things aren't going to, like, if one of those things increases, it's probably not going to cause you to like still lose weight or lose fat. It's like each one of those contributes a little bit and might, contribute to that scenario. But like you said, the goal of a reverse diet isn't, hey, we're going to reverse diet so your metabolism is going to be now like stoked and on fire and now you're going to like burn all this bunch of body fat. The point of a reverse diet is to just get your calories up and get your body to a better spot, to respond to fat loss long term and to a healthier spot. It's not necessarily to see a fat loss result from the reverse diet.
Yes, 100%. So, okay, I'm going to kind of switch our order here a little bit because I think this will be a great question to ask afterward. But what, like, in terms of metabolic adaptation, can metabolic adaptation be reversed while reversing calories, which we kind of just talked about? But I would love for you to kind of talk about metabolic adaptation in the opposite way of like some of the negative adaptations that we can see happen when we are dieting. And we pretty much just walk through why reverse dieting helps that.
Yeah, so man, there's like so many rabbit holes we could go into with metabolic adaptation. I love reading about it. I feel like it's so interesting.
It
But
is.
so I guess metabolic adaptation, like I guess first maybe talking about what causes it is important. So
Yes.
metabolic adaptation is typically caused by like three different things. Usually it's a loss of lean body mass. Whether that be from muscle mass or even like something that people don't really think about is like organ mass. Sometimes when you're dieting for a long period of time, your actually organs get a little bit smaller and that can cause a little bit of metabolic adaptation too. So just overall loss of lean mass in general, but also loss of body fat if your body fat ends up getting too low or maybe too low for you individually, which is maybe something I'll talk about too, but your body fat level getting low can cause metabolic adaptation. And then also your calories being low. So there's kind of three different things that can cause metabolic adaptation. And when it comes to metabolic adaptation as well, some people describe it as the reduction in your basal metabolic rate or your BMR, which is basically how many calories you burn at rest. And then some people describe it as the reduction in how many calories you burn total, like your total daily energy expenditure. And those are kind of two different things too. But it's typically when the predicted energy expenditure from either the RMR or the total daily energy expenditure is lower, or the predicted is higher than what you're actually burning. So you're actually burning less than what we think you should burn based off of these equations and, where your body weight is at and stuff. So it's like if somebody were to lose 50 pounds and you put their stuff into a calculator and it says, okay, they should be burning 2000 calories per day at their new body weight, but they're actually only burning 1750 or 1800. That's kind of like metabolic adaptation is that because they've lost all this body fat and they've eaten a lower calorie and maybe lost lean mass, their energy expenditure is lower than what we would think it should be. So that's kind of like, I guess, a definition and what kind of causes metabolic adaptation. And what was your question, I guess?
So in terms of, I guess a question that I got was, with metabolic adaptation, it was one, understanding it, which you did a great job of breaking it down, but then two, can reversing calories improve metabolic adaptation? So basically, we are seeing a lot of these negative, quote unquote, negative adaptations happening whenever we reverse dieting. So essentially, yes, reversing calories will reverse that metabolic adaptation to a certain extent. I'm curious your thoughts on like being able to ever, like after a fat loss phase, being able to regain like full function, like hormonally, be at the same metabolic standpoint as you were prior. I think that sometimes people think like, hey, I started out around like 2,300 calories, and then I went to a fat loss phase. I lost 50 pounds. Sometimes I think people are like, well, I should be able to get back up to 2,300 calories and maintain. But sometimes we can't always do that, right? Because we might be at a lower set point. So I think maybe even talking through that and just helping us understand, okay, why does reverse dieting help with metabolic adaptation?
Yeah, so really great question. So when it comes to metabolic adaptation and like bringing your calories up, and if we can to get to that same exact point we were at before, some people may be able to, but a lot of people can't get exactly up to there. And it's for a couple of reasons. One, probably the biggest reason, is that your body's just smaller. Like a big part of how many calories you burn is just how much mass you have on your body. So if you lose 50 pounds, that's 50 pounds of less mass that you're carrying around at all times. So your body's just burning a little bit less at rest, no matter what you do. So, like, if you normally would eat, like you said, I think 2,300, once you lose 50 pounds, you might only be able to eat 2,100 and maintain your weight now because you've lost all that weight. And sometimes this metabolic adaptation is even a little bit stronger, where like you actually burn only 1,900, and it actually is more than what is predicted based on your new weight. That's kind of what we talked about with metabolic adaptation. I've been reading a lot about too this kind of aspect of your there's like an upper like threshold limit and a lower threshold limit for a lot of people when it comes to the amount of body fat that they have on their body. So some like people probably know the term a little bit better of like your body fat set point. They probably heard that at some point, but there's usually a range, and some people's range might be, okay, they comfortably hold body fat at between 20 and 25% body fat. Like anywhere in that range, their body kind of comfortably holds on to that, and they don't experience metabolic adaptation that much if they're in that range or at all. And they're able to reverse metabolic adaptation maybe completely as long as they're in that range. Some people, their lower threshold limit might be 25% body fat, and their upper might be 30. And if they get to like 22% body fat, lower than that level, even if they're eating a good amount of food because their body fat is lower than that lower threshold limit, they're gonna maybe experience some of those symptoms of their metabolism being a little bit slower than predicted. They might even have a little bit more hunger that's trying to naturally drive them back in their happy range. So that individually can make a big impact on if the reverse diet, I guess, effectively reverses metabolic adaptation, is if they are in that like lower to upper threshold limit or in that body fat set point range or not. So that like plays a big role there too.
For sure.
And also, I don't know if you've looked into or read about like different phenotypes when it comes to like metabolism, with like a thrifty phenotype versus a spendthrift, I believe it's what it's called.
Oh, I've never heard of this.
Yeah.
No.
So a thrifty metabolic phenotype is basically where the person's metabolism, like if you bring calories down or go into a fat loss phase, will adapt very quickly on the low end. So if you
Okay,
bring,
okay.
yeah.
So like
So if,
adaptive versus okay, that makes
yeah,
a
kind
lot of
of
sense.
adaptive versus not adaptive. But what's interesting is like these thrifty phenotype people, sometimes it's very adaptive on the low end. So if you bring calories down, it adapts really well. So like you think someone would be in a 500 calorie deficit if you brought their calories down by 500, but they might actually only be in like a couple hundred, and you have to bring their calories a lot lower than what you would expect because of that. But it doesn't necessarily always adapt to the high end. So like they can go into a surplus really easily and gain weight, but going into a deficit, they like really feel, or you have to really dig to like lose body fat. Yeah, so
That's
that
so
would.
interesting. Okay, so I've heard of this. I just know it as a different terminology than thrifty, which is so funny.
Yeah, so thrifty would be that. And then spendthrift would be somebody whose metabolism actually adjusts a little bit better on the high end. So if they go into a surplus, it doesn't actually turn into a surplus as well. But when they go into a deficit, their body doesn't actually adapt on the lower end as much, which is like good because you don't want it to adapt to the lower calories, right? But what's interesting is like the people who are thrifty versus spendthrift, the people who are thrifty, who their metabolism adapts to the low end, they actually tend to have a higher metabolic rate at baseline versus the spendthrift one. So even though they, like the spendthrift, are at a disadvantage because their metabolism adapts to the low end easier, they actually can eat a little bit more than the, spendthrift type at maintenance. So it's just really interesting the individual differences with that, to where like the thrifty person probably needs maybe a reverse diet a little bit more versus the spendthrift, since a spendthrift doesn't adapt to that lower intake as much.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Just the entire process of metabolic adaptation and the way that certain people adapt is so interesting to me. And I think that's also where just the individuality of what we do comes into play so much. And also why it's so important not to compare your own rate of weight loss or fat loss or whatever it may be to anyone else's, right? Because you don't know what kind of, metabolic adaptation they are dealing with, also, whenever it comes to their lifestyle, their history, everything of that sort, right? So, yeah, so interesting.
Well, and also too, it like this is so fascinating, and we're only touching on the one side of the equation of how many calories are burned. We're not even touching on the effect hunger can be individually different between people when you bring calories down or increase calories, which then can play a role, because you might be a thrifty person where, let's say, you have to bring your calories a lot lower than what you think to actually see the fat loss you want. But if your hunger doesn't increase in proportion to that, it doesn't matter that much because you're not hungry and you don't care if you're eating low calories, right? But somebody else who experiences higher hunger, it might be more of an issue. So
For sure.
that can play a big role. So I think like somebody who's quote unquote thrifty, like I described, they probably would benefit from a reverse diet more, but they also would probably benefit from having like diet breaks and things in there more, just because they have to dig deeper to actually get the 500 calorie deficit, or the stereotypical 1 pound of fat loss per week deficit that they need, versus somebody else. So yeah, it's very individual, which is why, like, we give recommendations and stuff on podcasts and everything, but like, unless you're working with somebody and like actually adjusting and seeing these things and learning with people, makes a big difference. Like I've had this client, and she can eat like 20, like 25, 2600 calories a day and like not gain weight. But if we go into a fat loss phase, we have to go down to like 17 to 1600. And it's like we bring your calories down to 2000, still stays the same. And it's like that's not what you would typically expect. And not everyone is like that, but there are some people where their metabolism just really adjusts, to the opposite direction.
And there are some people out there who really have like that quote unquote inflated maintenance calorie level where it's like their maintenance is just such a wide range, right? And it's like you do have to push lower. And it sounds like, that's a situation like with your client. And I've had clients like that as well. And again, I think this also harps back to the importance of working with a coach one-on-one, right? Because like if you are not somebody who is well versed in this and who it has experience in working with these things and making these adjustments, you are not going to know how to make these adjustments for yourself, whether you do need to push more, whether you do need a diet break, a refeed, whatever it may be, if you're trying to do this on your own.
Yeah. And can I just say something else too? That's been kind of on my mind a little bit. So I know one of like the potential questions, and you might have been getting to this, was how low should calories get in a dieting phase? And this is something that like always kind of rubs me the wrong way, or gets to me, when I see coaches out there putting stuff out like, oh, like all of my clients eat over 2000 calories a day and consistently losing weight. Because I think it's frustrating if you're somebody who is genuinely tracking their food and really eating 2000 calories a day and you're not losing weight, or if you have to eat 1500 to lose weight and you feel like, am I doing something wrong? Like, am I harming my body
I gotta
completely?
push 1300, 1350 calories whenever I'm in a fat loss phase.
And it's just everyone's so individual, and how low your calories should get is dependent on like your individual metabolism, like those phenotypes and all that stuff we just talked about. Also, even just your general body frame. Like, what are you, 5 foot,
I'm
right?
5 foot. Yep. So I'm
5 foot.
short. Yeah.
So you're short, you're smaller person. Like, you're gonna have to dig deeper than what people think is sustainable, right? Like, people throw out the 1200 calorie number of like, oh, that's the recommended intake of a toddler, so you should never go that low, which I don't know if I've ever had a client eat 1200, so don't think I'm advocating for eating 1200, but like you
Agreed.
said, you had to get down to like 1350 or something. So that, I mean,
Yeah.
that's pretty close to 1200, right? And
Right.
it's just like putting those blanket statements out there of, oh, if you hit 1200, you're eating the intake of a toddler, you're stupid, you shouldn't do that. I think we need to be careful as coaches of putting that stuff out there. And like if we're gonna get technical, 1200 calories for a toddler is a surplus because they're growing versus you're trying to be in a deficit. You're trying not to grow. So you're kind of comparing like apples to oranges a little bit. I mean, like I said, I don't recommend 1200 calories to really anybody, but like
No.
we just gotta stop saying things in such black and white, I don't
I
know, terminology, I
agree.
guess.
I agree. And something that my own coach and mentor has also taught me too, it's like, I think for a really long time, I was very scared to push clients past a certain calorie point because I do think there was this huge boom of like, oh my gosh, you're eating 1200 calories. Like, you can't be doing that. And I think, of course, like, and I mean, I've even said that before. You know what I mean? Like, 1200 calories is a low amount, of course, but we're talking about that in the sense of there are so many women out there who are literally just living their entire life eating 1200 calories a day and thinking that's a maintenance calorie level, which it's not. There's a very big difference between thinking that 1200 calories is your maintenance versus having to push to 1200 calories, depending on where your metabolism's at, how short you are, what your frame is at, all of that kind of stuff at the end of a fat loss phase. You know what I mean? So
Yeah.
I think that's so huge, and just like not making blanket statements like that and understanding that the context, of course, always is so important.
Yeah, absolutely. And doing it under the guidance of, you know, like a professional who's going to make sure, oh, you're not going to eat 1200 for months and months and months on end. Like we're going to do it in a strategic way if we ever push that low and, you know, make sure we bring calories up high, like pretty quickly and all that stuff. So
100%, 100%.